undecideds among Hoosiers 50 and older. Democrats want the Kavanaugh vote delayed. That, plus the toll road deal approved and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 21st, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a poll on the Senate race sponsored by AARP Indiana shows Joe Donnelly with a slight lead and many people undecided. The poll commissioned by AARP surveyed about 800 Hoosier voters aged 50 and older, and it shows Democrat Joe Donnelly with a slight lead on Republican Mike Braun, 38 to 35. 26% of those in the poll say they're undecided in the Senate race. The pollster did not include Libertarian Lucy Brenton in the questionnaire. Top issues among the key Hoosier voting bloc: Social Security, Medicare, health care costs, and prescription drug prices. President Donald Trump's job approval is fairly strong in the AARP poll. Half of those surveyed give him the thumbs up, while just 39% disapprove. How important is that undecided number in the AARP poll? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette Statehouse reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, older voters are generally the most reliable when it comes to turnout.
Right.
How important, then, is this 26% undecided?
Well, I think it's very good news for Joe Donnelly, because, yes, voters that are older vote more reliably, but they also vote more conservatively. And it's part of Donald Trump's base, and you can see that by the number there. And yet, with that number, Braun is trailing. And I think that's very, very good news for Joe Donnelly.
How is the undecided number good news for Mike Braun?
Undecided number in this poll doesn't matter, because this is a poll. This is a parlor game poll, not a real poll that we need to be making decisions off of tactically. This was a poll of registered voters, not likely voters. It didn't seem like there was any modeling done to the electorate, right, in trying to do geographically, to do the rest of the modeling that you would need to do to make this more relevant. So, and they didn't even include the Libertarian candidate that will be on the ballot when they're asking the question. So, I mean, we can all kind of find a point that we want to make, but I don't give this poll a lot of credence.
Yeah, is this one, you have to shrug this one off a little bit? Has AARP had a message they wanted to send with this poll?
Every poll, I think, you can, depending on how questions are asked and how, I mean, you can find something to like, you can find something to criticize with virtually every poll. I'm frankly surprised by the high number of undecideds, because my way of thinking, not only are older voters more reliable voters, but they tend to be more attuned voters. They perhaps, at least historically, have been the ones who are paying closer attention throughout a campaign, throughout a race. They maybe are, if only because of a life experience, they have a little bit better sense of the issues, or at least where they stand on the issues and where the candidates stand on the issues. So I'm not sure what to make of it, that's such a large number, but it does surprise me.
Do you think this was obviously 50 and older, but in the general population, how much do you think Joe Donnelly and Mike Braun are trying to get undecided voters at this point?
I think the previous two polls we've talked about that were in the 6-7% undecided range is probably a little more realistic. I mean, maybe you could bump it up to 10. But obviously, I mean, those undecideds in this close of a race is going to be what, you know, decides it all, are the ones who pick the winner.
Well, the fight over President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh intensified this week amid a sexual assault allegation against the judge. Christine Blasey Ford alleges that more than 30 years ago, when she and Brett Kavanaugh were teenagers in high school, he groped her and tried to remove her clothing at a party. Those allegations put Kavanaugh's nomination on hold as lawmakers seek answers. The Senate Judiciary Committee will move forward with a hearing scheduled for Monday on the allegations. That's despite a request from Ford for an FBI investigation. Senator Joe Donnelly had called for a delay in the committee vote on Kavanaugh due to Ford's accusation. That vote was originally scheduled for this week. His Republican opponent, Mike Braun, also called for such a delay and said he supports a review of the allegations, quote, weighed against Judge Kavanaugh's decades of public service, sterling record on the bench, outstanding personal reputation, and unequivocal denial of the allegations. Joey Fox, this nomination, as we've talked about a lot on the show, it was already a fairly tricky political situation. It seems it's becoming a little trickier. Who's, whether you're Republicans, Democrats, or anything in between, who's most at risk as this situation continues to unfold?
I think the Senate Democratic Caucus has done untold damage to victims in the way they have treated Dr. Ford and her allegations by holding on to them for as long as they did, leaking everything, getting this out after the hearing and the vetting process were over. They've politicized this beyond what was already a political situation. And what could have been forced this woman to come out and explain this now, right? We don't have a lot of choices here. She's making an accusation that will need to be done under oath at a hearing. The accused has a right to face his accuser and answer those specific allegations. And see where we go. But I'm just stunned that the Senate Democrats have done this and now are using this woman in order to further their political ends.
Using her. You have someone who is looking for a lifetime appointment in the highest court in the land that will affect generations of women in this country. And he's accused, as some Republicans are saying, of hijinks when he was in high school. Well, I don't care how drunk he was. You don't do a sexual assault unless there's a predilection for that, okay? And that is not hijinks. And that deserves a full investigation. Anita Hill had an FBI investigation, and by the way, it was treated shamefully by the U.S. Senate, and that's what's going to happen here, too. And the Republicans are making a huge mistake with this. It's not simply her word against his word, because they're going to take his word. They're going to say an exemplary life justifies a prior assault. And they're going to say, either that or that she's lying. That's what they're going to say, or that her memory is faulty, or some other nonsense to excuse that. What it deserves is a full investigation, not just he said, she said. There's extrinsic evidence out there, and they don't want to find it. They don't want to find it because they want to reject what she says and appoint him to the U.S. Supreme Court no matter what his background is.
That is shocking. Dr. Ford sent this letter a while ago. Why wasn't it?
I think Dianne Feinstein made a mistake on this because she thought she was protecting the confidentiality, and you can't protect the confidentiality in something this visible. You simply can't. It's not like other sexual assaults where the paper will report the sexual assault but not the identity of the victim. When you've got something this public, the victim has to come forward, and I think it took a while for the victim to realize that. And that, you know, it's unfortunate that they rushed this through without a thorough background investigation in the first place. But it isn't too late to do that.
It is not too late to spend
a week and have the FBI look at these allegations and see if there's anybody else coming forward, as we found out with Clarence Thomas. There was other evidence of Clarence Thomas' predilections, which came out after he was sworn in. The same kind of thing is happening now.
So to go back to something I started with, which was a tricky political situation getting trickier. If you're Joe Donnelly, you were already facing a tough choice here. Does this make it a little easier or a little more difficult?
I think it makes it a little bit easier for him because he can point to a specific issue of character and say that that's enough to cause him pause for a lifetime appointment. Whereas before, you know, that wasn't there. And I'm in no way saying it's an excuse or an out. I'm saying that is his reason, and it makes it, I think, a little more palatable to people who can see that woman's face and hear her. Hopefully on Monday we will hear her versions, and so I think he will definitely lean that way.
Same sort of question.
I think that's a perfect assessment. I would agree 100% with Nikki's take on that. I do think it makes it a little bit easier for the reasons she spelled out. It's no longer simply a ideological test. It's more of a, there are any number of, the cross currents are significant here. And the best thing he can probably do at this point is just maybe pretend that this clamor hasn't, erupted around him when both sides have been vying for his support and going on what now? Well, certainly ever since this appointment was made, or before, let's go back to when their retirement was announced,
yeah.
And just do what he was going to do from the outset.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Senate Republicans encourage an FBI investigation into sexual assault allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh? A yes or B, no. Last week's question, will Senator Joe Donnelly's vote on Brett Kavanaugh affect his reelection bid? 26% say yes, that vote will help him. 24% say it'll hurt him. And 50% say the vote won't really matter in the end. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Indiana Finance Authority this week gave its official stamp of approval to a deal with the private Indiana toll road operator that raises tolls on trucks to generate $1 billion for Indiana. Indiana will get $1 billion over 3 years in the deal with the private toll road operator. That comes with a one-time 35% toll rate hike on commercial trucks, which has drawn sharp criticism from trucking companies. The deal's also drawn some skepticism from those involved in the original toll road lease. In a report from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette's Nikki Kelly, a transportation policy expert who consulted on the toll road lease for Mitch Daniels, calls the new agreement, quote, concerning because it goes back on the heavily vetted initial deal. Former lawmakers from the Fort Wayne area who voted on the original lease deal also balked a bit at the significant change the new agreement makes. Nikki Kelly, I can't believe I'm starting on this topic with you. Is the legislature going to be comfortable with such a significant change that doesn't come with any legislative oversight?
There's definitely some underground grumbling amongst Republicans. I mean, loudly amongst Democrats, and they're willing to put their name to it. But Republicans are a little more cautious. They support what Governor Holcomb's trying to do. They like the choices and priorities he's made. But, you know, executive versus legislative branch stuff is kind of always a natural adversary. And I can't imagine that if he was a Democrat governor, they would not be throwing a fit about $1 billion in unappropriated money.
No one disputes that he is well within every legal right to do exactly what he has done in reaching this agreement with the private company. So is this more a matter of legislative ego, if there are grumblings?
You're saying if there is such a thing as legislative ego?
I think we can stipulate there's such a thing as legislative ego.
Sure, and that's always going to be there. And you see that tension all the time. I think Nikki is right again that if you had a different party affiliation, one versus the other, the majority caucus in the House and Senate versus the governor, you'd see much more of an
grumbling.
Outcry and more than grumbling. But this is something clearly that needs to be done. There's an upside. No one, you know, if you did open it up to the General Assembly, there's the group that would say, you know, we can't abide by this because it's an increase effectively in taxes, even though it's a user fee that only on trucks. You can, again, slice that a bunch of different ways. So in a way, I guess if you're going to get an end result here, which is $1 billion, which is nothing to sneeze at, to put toward something that Hoosiers can recognize immediately, which is improving roads, and it's affecting, in their eyes, somebody else, meaning largely interstate truckers. It's not great if you're an interstate trucker, but if you're an average citizen, you're probably saying, dodge that one. And then they see a tangible improvement without any lawmaker having to say, be accused of raising taxes. So, I mean, there's an odd sort of, you can grumble, but in the end, you're kind of
coming out kind of clean on this.
You're coming out clean. You have plausible deniability, as Woodward and Bernstein would have said.
Would Governor Holcomb perhaps just have been slightly better served by, for instance, with the truckers? Some of the truckers, they don't like the idea of having to pay more in tolls, but they really don't like the idea of just finding out they're going to pay more in tolls without any discussion. Would Governor Holcomb have been better served here talking to maybe that group, talking to lawmakers a little more ahead of time?
Well, look, I mean, nobody's going to say that more communication is a bad thing in politics, but what I think we should be focusing on here, because you said, I think, half of the equation, John, is that, yeah, we get $1 billion, we get all upside and no downside, you know, right? There's no risk. Somebody else is taking care of the road. If they default, right, we get the money, and we get $1 billion in new cash to spend making really necessary improvements specifically, I mean, I'll highlight in rural broadband access to help bring the rest of the state up to where we are. And nationally, we've been recognized now because we're the center of the 5G world, right? So these investments and continuing to do these are really important. And this comes with very, very little to no risk on our part. I think it's a great deal.
Let me put it this way. Obviously, it would have happened sooner, or it happened sooner than if they had gone to the legislature. But if they'd gone to the legislature, who's voting against this deal?
I don't think anybody. This is just an illustration of the fact that the General Assembly was snookered by Mitch Daniels. I mean, when they put this deal through, they took power away from the General Assembly, and they didn't pay attention, or they deferred to Mitch Daniels in a way perhaps they're not going to defer to Eric Holcomb.
They voted
so
for
it's nobody quarrels with where the money's going, but you know, in Indiana, like in most democracies, we have a system for how this works, and it goes to an appropriations committee, and it goes to a budget committee, and it goes through the General Assembly, and everybody decides, all the elected officials decide where it's supposed to go, and that's what's missing here.
And to be fair, I don't think the lawmakers want to decide on tolls. I mean, they got out of that business, let's be honest.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think they want to decide on where that money's going. We're getting ready to do a new two-year budget, and that's $600 million of revenue in a two-year budget at a time when we have holes in our DCS budget. So, I mean,
it'll end up being actually about $800 in the two-year budget because they'll get the second installment next year,
Sorry, math is hard.
I didn't get into this
but
for the math.
That is
I was told
point.
There would be
they
no
want, they want some. They want they wanted legislative input into how the money was going to be spent without the risk of raising the tolls, and that's, it seems to me, what they've been deprived of.
All right. While Republican congressional candidates agreed to debates this week, as Democrats also upped pressure on some other incumbents to engage their opponents. Republican Congresswoman Jackie Walorski reached agreement with Democratic challenger Mel Hall for two televised debates in the 2nd District race. That's after 3rd District Representative Jim Banks recently agreed to a debate with his Democratic opponent, Courtney Tritch. Yet other Republican congressional candidates have so far avoided debates, including 9th District Representative Trey Hollingsworth, who's in a tough race with Democratic challenger Liz Watson. The Indiana Democratic Party criticized those candidates, though it also chided statehouse candidates for failure to debate, even though debates in statehouse races are much less common. John Schwanes, I'm going to focus really on the congressional candidates here because it would be unusual in a lot of statehouse races to see debates the way Democrats are calling for. But particularly the incumbents, is there motivation to debate your challenger?
If you're talking from a pure political strategy standpoint, no. Why would you give a platform to your opponent when you're presumably better known and have you're the person who has the seat
already has
and
the job.
Already had convinced voters to go your direction once before? Now, putting aside that, I think as much as they don't want to do it and as much as they see it as helping, aiding and abetting the enemy, I don't see how you avoid it if you're in that line of work. It's an occupational hazard. You do work for voters. Or at least I think that's the way I studied it in civics class. And you owe it to them, I think, to therefore every election cycle field questions and enter into that kind of unscripted fray with your opponent. So the citizenship hat, if I put that on, I say it's absolutely essential, 100%.
To that idea of being responsive to the voters, I think a lot of people who don't do debates will say, well, I'm out in the district all the time talking to voters, and that's how I'm responsive to the voters. You think voters see it that way?
Well, when they're out in the district, obviously they have the talking points they want to talk about, and they're hitting things. I mean, things are a little less in your control in a debate period, and it's not just going, you know, mano a mano against your opponent, but also off the cuff and having to think on your feet and see how your grasp of the issues really is. And so I think it's still invaluable. Though, to be honest, I mean, I get what John's saying, that, you know, there's not a lot of upside to them agreeing for it. It's free media for their opponent, basically.
Let me put it this way, then. If you're the incumbent, particularly, if there's not a lot of upside, is there enough downside that it really forces them to do this? Do voters essentially do voters care?
There should be. I mean, obviously, in Trey Hollingsworth's situation, he has what they call the ducking debate fever going on here. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to discuss the issues. The idea that he's better known, I'd question that. I mean, he got in on the Trump landslide. He didn't live in Indiana or anything else. But that's symptomatic of a wider Republican approach. In Putnam County, the League of Women Voters has gotten one response from the Republicans running in Putnam County from an incumbent who's unopposed. All the rest are ducking it. That's the League of Women Voters. That's not even a debate. That's a forum where they can ask questions. I mean, citizens have a right to talk to their elected officials in a forum that isn't completely controlled by the elected officials. And that's what they're denying the voters. I think that'll be an issue.
Could you put in a call to Congressman Carson's office?
He'd be happy to.
Please, I've been in Republican politics, Marion County, for 10 years, and I can remember taking the two podiums around, right, in debates that Congressman Carson would never, ever show up to.
Okay.
He has not done a debate. He won't. Why do we only highlight this on, you know, when it's Republican incumbents, and
it does go both ways.
We only have to be accountable to the voters
if we're
in a competitive race.
But I want you to tell me who Congressman Carson's opponent is.
Wayne Harmon's running, right?
You think?
There is precedent, whether it's the current congressman or his predecessor with the same last name, because I moderated some of them sitting in the same studio. Or maybe next door in that studio over there. Memory fails me there. But I do remember I moderated that.
So it has happened both ways.
Well, right.
But I'll say this. But yes, Democrats should debate too. But the point is there any motivation for them to debate at this point? If you're someone who's resisted up to now,
I think all the conventional wisdom around the table is if you're an incumbent, right, the incentive is always not to debate,
right?
The pure political one.
Well, the political incentive would be not to even stand for re-election, just have it done by fiat.
Well, that's what Trey Hollingsworth wants.
But that's kind of not what the process is that we've adopted here.
All right. Well, President Trump announced more tariffs on Chinese imports this week as two Indiana Republicans expressed continued concerns. President Trump announced $200 billion in new tariffs on Chinese imports this week. China soon followed with $60 billion on U.S. imports. That's after a similar back and forth between the two countries in July. Second District Congresswoman Jackie Walorski says she's increasingly concerned about tariffs' harmful impact to Hoosier farmers and manufacturers. She says she understands the need to hold China accountable, but says Trump and Chinese President Xi need to meet face-to-face to work out a better deal. Those thoughts were echoed by 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks in an interview with the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. He says the president's broad approach and ensuing trade war is harmful to the Hoosier economy. Joey Fox, we have here two Republicans, and we are doing a little bit of the juxtaposition here. One is in a very safe re-election bid and one in a tougher re-election bid, both willing to criticize the president for these decisions. Why can't Mike Braun?
Well, he could. And I think that Republicans of good conscience should be criticizing these decisions. Tariffs are taxes. This is basic economics. If we want to have a more pinpointed strike against the Chinese for intellectual property theft, that's one thing.
Or even the steel imports a little bit.
But the president used a national security rationale on steel and aluminum tariffs that I don't believe exist. I think that the rationale here is bad. I think protectionist Democrats should be supporting this, not free market Republicans. So I'm really proud of these two for what they're doing.
Yeah, has the world turned upside down a little bit on tariffs?
It was turned upside down in November of 2016 when that man was in the White House. But when he was elected, he wasn't in the White House until January. But anyway, the reason you don't have Mike Braun criticizing him is because he wants to be a rubber stamp. He's made that point over and over again. It isn't just on tariffs. He supports the president's denial of coverage for pre-existing conditions. He wants to take health care away from 400,000 Hoosiers. He doesn't care that it hurts Indiana, which is what the two Republican congressmen are addressing, that it hurts their districts. He doesn't care about that. What he cares about is whatever Donald Trump wants, I'm for.
Take it to the extreme and say he doesn't care about it. But
would Mike Braun be served by showing a little bit of space between himself and Donald Trump on this specific issue?
I think it's probably a little too late. He's hitched his wagon. I mean, he's like all in. Yeah. And I think he's set up if he now started criticizing him, it would be bad. I mean, he's taking the same term of think long term. It'll make a difference in the long term, and trying to get Hoosiers to kind of see past the immediate harm.
Yeah, it would seem odd now, because all somebody has to do is go back to the primary campaign and pull out any number of options in terms of video where, as you'll recall, all of the candidates were trying to be more supportive of President Trump than the next guy. And
all right,
it's hard to abandon that.
Well, finally, the Federal Emergency Management Agency this week is preparing a test for a new emergency alert system that allows the president to send text messages to most U.S. cell phones. So, Ann Delaney, what message do you look forward to receiving from President Trump?
Oh, Mike Pence and I resign. How about that?
That's where my money was going. Now, it should be noted that federal law prohibits anything but emergency messages. How much do you think Donald Trump's going to pay attention to that law?
Not at all.
Nikki? the better question is, how would Ann respond when she gets that text?
I'd respond.
Can you respond?
That's an excellent question. Nikki, what are you thinking?
Maybe he'll, put Jeff Sessions out of his misery and just fire him.
There we go. Fire via text message. I like that.
And put Curtis Hill in?
Wouldn't be the first time somebody got fired by text.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.